Chapter 38, Communion Season, 1900. Today you have come to a sumptuous feast, to one that for many years has been awaiting you. Mary Baker Eddy, 1900. As Communion Sunday, June 3rd, drew near, the director sent a special letter of invitation to the leader. She responded on Saturday, June 2nd. Your kind request for me to be with you at your communion season is gratefully acknowledged. I am with you in my message. In propria persona, I shall be at Pleasant View. Be endurance, watching for the dear descent of divine love at the Feast of Soul. I cannot find time to meet you otherwise, and I am sure it will be a Pentecost for you all tomorrow. That same Saturday, at their semi-annual meeting, the first members admitted nearly 2,300 new members. The main feature of the communion service the next morning was the Mother's Message, which was read by John W. Reeder, CSB. Evidently, the inclement weather deterred no one, for though four services had been planned, it was soon seen that a fifth service would be necessary in order to accommodate all wishing to attend. Never before had so many scientists visited Boston at one time. Every seat was filled, and some were standing in the aisles at every service, including the last one at 7:30 p.m. The services were identical, with the exception of the fourth at 4 p.m. At the 4 o'clock service, it was suggested that some expression of gratitude should be extended to our leader for the most helpful and inspiring message received on the occasion, and the congregation rose en masse in passing a vote of thanks. A message was then sent to Mrs. Eddy at her home in Concord, making mention of this pleasing event. The mother was truly endurance at Pleasant View. One member of her household said, "Our leader seemed to be endurance at the communion season, in the sense that whenever the students assembled together, it brought an increase in the error for her to handle. This meant that she was compelled to stay at her post and work." A few students drank in every word of the Mother's Pentecostal message, but most would need to study and to ponder it later when it was issued in pamphlet form before they would know much of what the Mother had said. They were so filled with the joy of the occasion and the vacation atmosphere that they were not thinking deeply nor working scientifically. It was this very laxness that put such a burden upon the leader. Nevertheless, the occasion was a joyous one that would be long remembered by all present. The Mother Church now had over 18,000 members, more than 3,000 of whom attended the annual meeting, which was held in Mechanics Hall the following Tuesday. After the opening exercises conducted by President William P. McKenzie, he suggested the sending of a message of love, quote, "to our beloved teacher, leader, and mother in Israel," and asked the pleasure of the meeting, end quote. They did not follow the leader's example when appointing a committee, but the 8 prominent scientists selected: Captain Linscott of Washington, D.C., Mrs. Mims of Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Buswell of Beatrice, Nebraska, Dr. Fluno of Oakland, California, Judge Ewing of Chicago, Mrs. Stetson of New York City, Dr. Tompkins of Camden, New Jersey, and Mr. Bates of Boston, soon returned with an appropriate message, which was sent at once, and which said in part, "Beloved teacher, leader, and mother, your annual message of love and guidance to your church, and through your church to the whole world, has inspired the gratitude of all your children. And this moves us to renewed efforts and holier consecration to the work you have given us to do for all mankind. We recognize in your message a demand upon us to, quote, press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus," end quote. With the exception of the president, the officers of the church remained the same for the coming year. In other words, Stephen A. Chase, treasurer, William B. Johnson, clerk, S. J. Hanna, first reader, and Eldora O. Gregg, second reader. The new president for the coming year was Edward P. Bates, the man who had pushed the erection of the Mother Church edifice to completion in 1894. Bates had been president of the Mother Church at that time, and again in 1895. Perhaps the leader wanted this, quote, Minuteman, unquote, available in Boston in this litigious year of 1900. Following his address as incoming president, reports of progress and growth were the order of the day, midst an atmosphere of rejoicing. Once again, Tremont Temple had been engaged for the Wednesday evening meeting, which was held the next day, June 6th. But in 1900, it was found inadequate. Every inch of seating and standing room was crowded, and nearly 1,000 more were seeking entrance. The Boston Transcript reported, "It was an unusual meeting that took place in Tremont Temple last evening for the relation of experiences by Christian Scientists." When it was seen that the hall would not begin to include all who wanted to get into it, another meeting was started in Lorimer Hall, and this also was crowded, even to the limit of standing room. Judge S. J. Hanna presided at the main meeting, and Edward A. Kimball of the Board of Lectureship conducted the other. Local scientists had been asked to yield the floor to the visitors, but even so, both meetings had testimonies, one after another, sometimes one upon another, as fast as the speakers could rise and be recognized. Almost all told of healings of diseases or deformity, many of which resulted from the study of science and health alone. Local scientists did more than yield the floor to their visiting brethren. James A. Neal opened his pleasant rooms in Boston to the guests. Also, the large residence and spacious grounds of the Metcalfs in the lovely suburb of West Newton were placed wholly at the disposal of the visiting scientists, several hundreds of whom enjoyed this hospitality. many hundreds journeyed to Concord to visit Pleasant View, and though uninvited, were welcomed graciously. That fact, however, was not publicized, probably to keep from attracting the merely curious. Of course, the scientists were hoping that they might see the leader, and hundreds did see her on both Tuesday and Wednesday as she went out for her daily drive. On Thursday, June 7th, over 500 of the more than 6,000 scientists who attended the communion service were assembled on the lawn of her home when Mrs. Eddy addressed them from her porch, saying, as one listener recorded, "Beloved Christian Scientists, I greet you. I thank you and the 6,000. We have had the blessed communion season together. It has been blessed to you all. Behold, you have been weighed in the balance and have not been found wanting. Now, dear children, Christian Scientists, you are the walls of the earth. This week has been a memorable week to you and to me, coming to commune with our Lord. Carry back the glad tidings to the other 6,000. All that I have ever accomplished and all that I ever hope to accomplish for myself or for the cause has been accomplished through my absolute consecration to God alone. 34 years ago in Boston, I took on myself the cross. I said, Jesus, I my cross have taken, all to leave and follow thee. Naked, poor, despised, forsaken, thou from hence my all shalt be. Perish every fond ambition. All I've sought or hoped or known. Yet how rich is my condition. God and heaven are still my own. Let the world despise and leave me. They have left my Savior too. Human hearts and looks deceive me. Thou art not like them untrue. Oh, while thou dost smile upon me, God of wisdom, love, and might, foes may hate and friends disown me. Show thy face, and all is bright. When you see the little room upstairs with swing, think of Mother at twilight, thinking, pondering, and praying. I would say to all those who have come from far and near, showing their gratitude to the Mother Church of Christian Science, through me, goodbye, goodbye, which in the Saxon means, God bless you. A young journalist named Willard S. Maddox was one of those assembled at Pleasant View that Thursday. He had joined the Mother Church the year before, having been attracted to Christian Science by a wonderful healing his mother had experienced. Maddox was honored with a private interview with Mrs. Eddy, which may have marked the beginning of his dedicated work for Christian Science. Before the end of June, his letters as publishing committee for New York City, correcting misstatements about Christian Science and its founder, were being published in New York newspapers. The following Sunday, June 10th, was Communion Sunday in the branch churches. Visitors from 25 states, plus Canada and Norway, attended the services of the Concord Church, where the lesson sermon subject, as at all the branches, was sacrament. The Concord Church service was unique, however, in that the following letter from the leader was read to the congregation. Beloved Christian Scientists, each day during the past week, I have allowed myself the joy of welcoming to Pleasant View a dear multitude of Christian Scientists who came spontaneously without invitation or appointment, and with true hearts fervently. While I deeply appreciate their loving thoughts and desire to see Mother, yet in order not to hinder my work for God and our cause, my gates are now closed to visitors, except by previous appointment. The reading room in our hall is open to all. After writing the above, I opened my Bible to the verses 7, 8, and 9 of the 25th chapter of Matthew. With deep love, Mary Baker Eddy. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire, June 10th, 1900. Several years later, Mrs. Eddy said to members of her household, God talks to me through this book, the Bible, as a person talks to another, and has for 40 years. The wise in the congregation at Concord that day went home and read the three verses from Matthew 25, but the foolish probably did not. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves. A change took place at this 1900 communion season, which shows us today how every detail demanded the leader's attention. Article 32, Section 1 had been read in the churches on Communion Sunday. This is Article 8, Section 3, in the last manual. But a notice in the Sentinel of June 7, 1900 stated, Bylaw repealed. The bylaw which appeared in the 13th edition of the Church Manual as Section 1 of Article 32 has been repealed, so that only the church tenets are now to be read at the communion services. In a letter to Editor Hannah the next day, the leader said, Your ad that refers to a repealed bylaw relating to what has been read in church mystifies me. I have required no repeal of Article 32, Section 1, in the 13th edition of the manual. The next issue of the Sentinel published a correction. We were mistaken in saying last week that Section 1 of Article 32 of the Church Manual had been repealed. We should have said that the clause thereof requiring this bylaw to be read at the communion services was repealed. This seemingly minor error may have been but a part of the laxness in the holiday atmosphere. But whatever the cause, the mother, ever and always, had not only to direct, but to watch and correct the work of her students. For some scientists, the most rewarding part of this communion season was yet to come. Those chosen few were in Boston, to attend the normal class of the Board of Education, which was to convene on Wednesday, June 13th. The maximum number of students for this course was 33, plus those with a special invitation from Mrs. Eddy. A larger number would assemble approximately 2 weeks later for the course in obstetrics, which was to follow the normal class. The unusually large obstetrics class was due to a notice which had appeared in the Sentinel of April 26th, the obstetric course. In answer to inquiries, we will say that the class in obstetrics to be held in June is open to all students of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College who have not taken the obstetrics course. As the time is short, no formal applications need be made out, but letters requesting the course may be addressed to the Board of Education, 95 Falmouth Street, Boston. Or, in case of long distances, telegrams may be sent. As late as May 20th, Board of Education. For many weeks, the Board of Education, as well as the leader, had been preparing for this feast of soul. In May, Mrs. Eddy had written to the directors, "Elect only a board of three. Have bylaw amended to read thus, Board of Education, Judge Septimus J. Hanna, Edward A. Kimball, Dr. Alfred Baker." The leader's instruction to Hanna and Kimball on June 8th stated, "As I have requested the bylaw relating to husband and wife to be repealed, your construction is not questionable. I do not need to say you can teach both husband and wife as usual, and add to your teaching the hint they are not to quarrel over who shall be greatest. We all will take your hint. If the church has let me know it, I did request a repeal of the bylaw relating to husband and wife, and that you publish in this issue of Sentinel that it was struck out." The notice, which had not appeared in this issue of the Sentinel, was published a week later, June 14th, together with another change the mother had written to Hanna and Kimball on June 9th. "Beloved students, the way is clear as God's appointing, and this is the way. Have but one teacher during the college term, and have no member of the board present but this one teacher. Have this clause properly inserted in the church bylaw, and have a meeting called, and it acted upon immediately." Kimball was the one teacher of Christian Science. Hanna was the vice president of the board, and Dr. Baker was the teacher of obstetrics. On the 30th of June, following the normal class, Mr. Kimball wrote Mrs. Eddy his evaluation of many of the students, together with an explanation of how the teaching had unfolded. His first presentation was Christian Science as, quote, exact science, end quote. The second step was, quote, an elaborate uncovering of the claims of error, end quote. Logically, the third step was to meet and destroy this uncovered error with, quote, the sensible, practicable application, end quote, of Christian Science. The great need for, quote, the highest conceivable morality, the most tender love, and the activity of mercy, forbearance, and forgiveness, end quote, constituted the fourth and final area of presentation. Kimball's impression of Rabbi Max Wertheimer, who had been warmly received by the Christian Science Church when he had publicly resigned his rabbinical position in favor of Christian Science, was that he was insignificant in appearance and, quote, a poor public speaker, but does not know it, end quote. Albeit alert, well-read, industrious, dramatic, assertive, ardent, sincere, and on the whole promising. But when left on his own to demonstrate his knowledge of science, Wertheimer's promise soon faded. His interest proved superficial, and his later criticisms of Christian Science grossly inaccurate. Mr. Kimball saw unusual competence and earnestness in the two sisters from Scotland, E. Mary Ramsey and C. Lilias Ramsey, and the promise he saw in them was fulfilled in later years. William D. McCracken, though American, was as much the aristocrat as were Lady Ramsay's daughters. He was cultivated, refined, genial, and was also a scholar, a historian, and a reformer. He was one of the several who were in the normal class by special invitation from Mrs. Eddy. In his letter of June 11th to the leader, he recalled nostalgically, "As a boy, I often passed along the road from Concord to St. Paul's School, where I was from 1878 to 1881, and again in 1886 to 1887 as a teacher. Every part of the road is familiar to me, and the spot where your own Pleasant View is situated comes before my mind as I write." In his letter of June 30th, Mr. Kimball wrote of Mr. McCracken, "I was much pleased with Professor McCracken. He seems to be gentle, refined, and childlike in his reception of Christian Science, and I shall look with affectionate anticipation for a beautiful career." Perhaps Kimball felt that this student had not yet been tried by fire, for he added to the above, "I do not think that it is best to give Mr. McCracken a certificate this year." Within a few months, however, McCracken did prove himself and did receive his certificate to teach. The normal class was followed immediately by the class in obstetrics, shortly after which two changes appeared in the manual. Section 2 of Article 34 in the 17th edition, which was published in 1900, reads, "Not less than 7 lessons, and more if requisite, and but one each day, shall be given to students in obstetrics, under the auspices of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College." The following sentence was also added to Section 4 of the same article. Quote, "Beginning with the year 1901, the term for teaching obstetrics commences 6 months after the close of the college term." End quote. In Dr. Baker's notes of the obstetrics class, which have been preserved, is this paragraph. "Destroy the lie that there are any divisions or inconsistencies in the college. These are mental suggestions." Mother says, quote, "Mental suggestion is original sin," end quote. To say the teaching in the college is not uniform is a lie. Mother foresaw that the error would make this claim last summer, so had me sit in Mr. Kimball's class, and he in mine. The two teachers were students in one another's classes, and were not there as members of the Board of Education. The suggestion was sent forth that Mrs. Eddy was really teaching these classes through her students. Though she instructed, guided, and helped them all she could, the suggestion was fallacious and needed refutation. Dr. Baker's notes of the class include the sentence, quote, "When Error said Mother is teaching these classes, she answered that she is not teaching by proxy any more than patients are healed by her through favorite students," end quote. This refutation was made public and given to the field in the August 16th Sentinel. Question answered by Mary Baker G. Eddy. A fad of belief is the fool of mesmerism. The belief that an individual can either teach or heal by proxy is a false faith that will end bitterly. My published works are teachers and healers. My private life is given to a servitude, the fruit whereof all mankind may share. Such labor is impartial, meted out to no one more than another. Therefore, an individual should not enter the Massachusetts Metaphysical College with the expectation of receiving instruction from me, other than that my books afford, unless I am personally present. Patients do not anticipate being helped by me through some favored student. Such practice were erroneous, and such an anticipation on the part of the sick a hindrance rather than help. My good students have all the honor of their success in teaching or in healing. I by no means would pluck their plumes. Human power is most properly used in preventing the occasion. Otherwise, its use is abuse. Honor in his own country. While the rejoicing Christian Scientists were visiting in Boston and Concord, New Hampshire, Concordians were preparing for a celebration of another kind. Mrs. Eddy's helpers in Concord were concerned, especially those students who remembered her response to invitations to attend the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. In other words, quote, "Do not expect me. I have no desire to see or to hear what is to be offered. I have a world of wisdom and love to contemplate that concerns me and you infinitely beyond all earthly expositions or exhibitions," end quote. The students' concern was not because of the pending Concord State Fair, but because of the excellent location that the Fair Association of Active Concord Businessmen had obtained. Their newly acquired fairgrounds adjoined the south line of Pleasant View. Many might have objected to the crowds and noise injected upon their residential privacy, but Mrs. Eddy's understanding of individual liberty would not permit objection to anything a man wanted to do with his own property, so long as it was not evil. Different occasions require different tactics. The leader's message regarding the World's Fair in 1893 and her private words labeling it Vanity Fair were to Christian Scientists. The businessmen who formed the Fair Association in Concord in 1900 were not Christian Scientists, and she encouraged them in their endeavor. They extended to her a special invitation to attend the fair on Governor's Day, September 6th. But she declined their invitation to be listed on the program. Consequently, to all but the fair officials, her appearance was a surprise, and the reception spontaneous. It was Mrs. Eddy's first public appearance at other than her church functions in many years, and was reported in the press all across the country. The following is from the Boston Daily Globe. The feature of the day was not on the set program. This was the appearance of Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy. She arrived at the main entrance at 3 o'clock. The races on the track were immediately suspended, and under the escort of mounted police, with patrolmen on either side of her carriage, Mrs. Eddy drove around the racetrack in her Victoria, drawn by a pair of handsome bays. The coming of Mrs. Eddy was announced through a large megaphone, and when her carriage was driven before the grandstand, filled with 5,000 people and surrounded by 3 times that number, there was considerable applause and many bared heads. Mrs. Eddy responded with a gracious smile and nods of recognition. She looked remarkably fresh and fair for a woman of 80 years, and in her quiet dress of lavender shade, presented a picture not soon to be forgotten. The Boston Journal said of Mrs. Eddy's appearance, "As the carriage approached the governor's reviewing stand, she was announced to the throng as the Reverend Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. The band struck up a patriotic air, and the 10,000 spectators in the amphitheater waved handkerchiefs, cheered, and applauded. In deference to Mrs. Eddy's distaste for undue demonstration, the crowd had been requested by the authorities to refrain from a too boisterous recognition of her presence. After having made the circuit of the grounds, Mrs. Eddy and her escort, together with about 50 visiting Christian Scientists, witnessed the greater part of the afternoon program. Before leaving, Mrs. Eddy expressed to the authorities and to her escorts her appreciation of the honor paid her. Judge Hanna, who accompanied Mrs. Eddy to the fair, editorialized in the next issue of the Sentinel. The writer and his wife were honored by an invitation to accompany Mrs. Eddy in her carriage, and were thus afforded the privilege of witnessing her delight at the demonstration of welcome and cordiality, as well as her lively interest in all that transpired while she remained on the grounds. There were 2 events that deeply impressed her because of the thoughtful consideration evinced. The announcement of her name and designation as the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, and the request by the management that anything in the nature of a boisterous demonstration should be avoided because of her well-known distaste for undue publicity. The incident quite reversed the scriptural adage that a prophet is not without honor, save in his own country and in his own house. For never did a prophet or dignitary receive greater honor and respect than was accorded Mrs. Eddy on this occasion. Mrs. Eddy's special friend, George H. Moses, editor of the Concord Monitor and of the Independent Statesman, was a member of the Fair Association. This is his letter of September 8th. My dear Mrs. Eddy, ere this you have doubtless seen Mr. Pearson's account of your reception at the fairgrounds on Thursday. I trust his language is acceptable to you, though with the weight that the fair has put upon us, I am surprised if anything has gone as we would wish it. The main thing about your visit, which should be remembered as I regard it, is the genuine spontaneity of your reception. Nothing was prearranged. Nothing was studied. It was the true recognition of your personality, and as such is worthy to be cherished as indicating the real feeling of the people. Speaking for myself and for the other managers of the fair, I beg to express our thanks for your visit and our wish that we may see you on future governor's days when you may fitly share with, quote, the first citizen, end quote, the honors of, quote, the first resident, end quote, of the state. As was her custom, Mrs. Eddy expressed her appreciation in deeds as well as words. In her response to Mr. Moses, she said in part, I had no intimation and no idea of the kind care and honor that you had in store for me till I met the situation. It was indeed mutually spontaneous, a gentle effusion from the heart of the metropolis of my native state that will never pass from my memory, nor cease to cheer it. Please find enclosed a check for $1,000, my present gift to the Concord State Fair Association. This small sum is to be applied for aiding the improvement of the exterior of the buildings on the fairgrounds, including the cupola on the main building. Many newspapers remarked that this public appearance of the leader of Christian Science disproved the numerous recent accounts of her illness or decrepitude. Special notice was taken of her vigor and youthful appearance, and all in all, this seemed a fitting climax to the most prosperous season the cause had ever seen. Perhaps most noteworthy of the occasion was the public proof of the breaking of one more mortal belief by the demonstration that a prophet is with honor in his own country.